Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. Standing to challenge a federal law on 10th Amendment grounds edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 16th, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Bond versus United States. The question that the court answered was whether a person indicted for violating a federal statute has standing to challenge its validity on the grounds that, by enacting it, Congress exceeded its powers under the Constitution, thus intruding upon the sovereignty and authority of the states. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court unanimously held that Bond does have standing to challenge the federal statute on 10th Amendment grounds. Justice Ginsburg filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Breyer joined. To discuss the case, we have Dr. John C. Eastman, who is a professor at the Chapman University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Dr. Eastman.
The Supreme Court decided June 16th, a very important case in dealing with an overlap of international and treaty power and domestic authority under the U.S. Constitution. The case is Bond versus United States. And although the holding of the case itself is very narrow, simply that a criminal defendant has the right to raise federalism objections to the expansive federal statutory criminal law scheme under which they're being prosecuted. The case is significant, and on remand will address much more profound questions about the authority of the federal government and the very notion of our Constitution and whether it's going to continue to be one of limited powers. The facts of the case are fairly simple, but one hopes somewhat unique. Carol Ann Bond was married and also had a best friend girlfriend and was very excited for her friend when she found out her friend was pregnant. The excitement turned to anger and fury when she found out that the friend was pregnant by her own husband, Carol Ann Bond's husband, that is. Carol Ann Bond worked in a chemical plant and took some of the chemicals to put on the door handle and the car door handle and in the mailbox of her former best friend to cause chemical burns. Now, this is a pretty standard marital dispute and assault subject to state law, and she could easily have been prosecuted criminally under the Pennsylvania state criminal statutes. But instead, she was prosecuted under federal law, a statute that Congress adopted to implement the International Chemical Weapons Ban Treaty, and which reads very broadly both the treaty itself and the statute. And Carol Ann Bond challenged the criminal prosecution under that federal statute as exceeding federal authority, that really did interfere and intrude on the state's exercise of their own police powers. And this was not something that was delegated to the national government to regulate not our relations with other nations, but the domestic policing of somebody like Carol Ann Bond. Now, she raised those objections. The Court of Appeals said that she didn't even have standing. The United States had agreed with that position at the Court of Appeals level, but in a surprising turn, disavowed that ruling when it got to the U.S. Supreme Court. Acting Solicitor General agreed that one would have standing, tried to draw a narrow line, said if you're only raising a state sovereignty type of defense, you wouldn't have standing, but if you're raising an exercise of federal power that because of its intrusion on federalism exceeded federal powers and therefore implicated your individual rights, you would have standing. The Supreme Court rejected that nuanced line that the Department of Justice tried to draw and instead, I think, took the common sense position that anybody who's being criminally prosecuted has standing to challenge the constitutionality of the statute under which they're being prosecuted. The case is now back on remand, and we are going to find on remand, tease out a little bit, these very important additional constitutional questions. And they're important because in a number of areas, The United States government, particularly the current administration, is using executive orders and international treaties, executive agreements and international treaties, to affect domestic policy in ways that arguably go beyond the authority of Congress to have done initially through legislation. And we've got two lines of cases at the Supreme Court over the last century that are somewhat in tension, and I think Bond versus United States on remand is going to force us to confront that tension. The first goes all the way back to the beginning of the last century, Missouri versus Holland, which held in an era before we had expansively interpreted the Commerce Clause, that the federal government could, by treaty, regulate migratory birds that flew over the states, even if it could not do so directly under the Commerce Clause. Now, in the 1950s, another Supreme Court case kind of goes the other direction and creates the tension, and it acknowledged that the treaty power cannot be used to take actions that would violate the constitutional rights protected by the Bill of Rights. And so you've got this recognition that the Constitution puts limits on the scope of the treaty power, but thus far in the 1950s case, which is called Reed versus Covert, only on those rights limitations that we find in the Bill of Rights, not the structural limitations that flow out of the enumerated powers and limited government doctrines from the main body of the Constitution's text. Now, that's the Missouri versus Holland line. Bond forces us to address that issue, assuming that it exceeds Congress's power under the Commerce Clause or what have you, to regulate the basic state assault that went on here, either because it's an intrusion on state sovereign powers or because it's got nothing to do with interstate commerce. There's no commercial nexus or hook to the statute. Does this statute implementing a treaty exceed Congress's powers, and therefore are we going to have those structural limitations on the treaty power itself? Like I said, we're going to find that out on remand. I suspect that because this issue is so significant, if the Third Circuit on remand actually takes it up and addresses it in a very thoughtful way, we may find Bond versus the United States back up to the United States Supreme Court in the next year or two. And finally, after a half a century of this tension, get the Supreme Court to address this very fundamental question. Can I use the treaty power to undrun the limits on federal government power, or is the treaty power also limited by the very doctrines of structural federalism, enumerated powers, and otherwise that we hold so dear into our constitutional structure?
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.